And we are back for another edition of The Main Event. Today is episode 76, and we have got a couple of great guests as always. Today on the show, we have Julian Marquez, who landed one of the hugest and most scariest kicks to the face on his opponent at Contender Series that you will ever see. And that was against one of John Jones' top training partners. So that guy was a beast. If you didn't see the fight, you have to go check it out. And he landed himself a UFC contract from that huge kick, and now he's going to be on the show here to discuss that with us and what the future holds for him. Also, we have Jose Shorty Torres, who is a two-division champion in the Titan FC promotion, and I'm not sure how many belts he has, Brian, but I know it's a lot, so we're going to have to ask him about that.
18,332, I think, is the actual
Something to that effect, yeah. So, two great guests, and I'm really interested to talk to both of these guys because, as you were saying, you were the first one to kind of, you know, put me on about Torres because of his media game and how savvy he has been. And obviously, he's really doing well inside the cage, undefeated. And then obviously, Marquez with this huge knockout win. This is the UFC.
And he's a champ at Titan FC, which I think is one of the great up-and-coming promotions, too. That's almost like a little bit of a feeder system with legacy and everything.
Right.
You have these promotions that sort of funnel a lot of great talent to the Contender Series, to the UFC, to Bellator, to Pro Fight League. These are the promotions that are your next step up. They're like the AAA or AA.
Right.
Some other promotions are a little smaller. You could almost say they're like independent ball or even single A, where it's the beginning parts of your career. But, yeah, Titan FC, I think, is right next to it. And again, he's a champion at not just flyweight, but he's also a champion at bantamweight, too. And the belts are almost bigger than his torso. That just shows you his size. And I don't want to demean him because he's a little short in stature, but that's perfect for the weight class. And he's just been dominating to the point where this undefeated pro in Shorty Torres, I think we will see at some point in the UFC, and I think he could be a guy who's dominating the 125-135 eventually down the line.
Who knows? He could be the next Mighty Mouse.
Maybe.
Right? You never know.
I seriously do think, and we'll make our fearless UFC 215 predictions with the belt on the line here later on in the program, but I honestly think that Mighty Mouse is going to go to 135, and it's going to open up the 125 division for a couple of different things.
Yep.
Either Dana White's axe to chop down the division and get rid of it completely, or it's going to allow some new superstar to emerge, or at least someone to take the crown from Mighty Mouse and maybe have him face them eventually once the division's flushed out a little bit more.
Yeah, someone's going to have to take the crown because when Mighty Mouse eventually, it's probably going to be after this Borg fight, when he vacates the belt and goes up to 135, you know, he's got nobody else to fight in the 125-pound division right now. So it needs the UFC needs a new star in that division, and maybe Torres is the guy to be, you know, to fill that role. We'll wait and see, but we're going to have to ask him about that and see if that's something that he anticipates happening in the next couple of years.
You know what I would do with Mighty Mouse's career? Just a little fantasy booking here real quick. He beats Ray Borg. I think, spoiler alert, I'm going to pick Mighty Mouse in that prediction.
I would never have guessed.
But I'm going to pick him, and I'm going to say, you know what his next logical move is? It's to go up to 135 and not get the title shot away, because it would almost be a little bit of I don't know. I'm trying to think of the word. What's the word I'm looking for?
It's a little too premature.
Well, not premature, but it would be kind of... I can't think of it exactly, but he didn't want Dillashaw to get it right when he dropped down to 25, so I don't think he should get the bantamweight title shot right away.
Right. Well, look, Mighty Mouse has been clearing out the 125-pound division. There's a ton of killers that are in line for a title, shooting themselves 135 for a while now.
Right.
So Mighty Mouse, in my opinion, as great as he was at 125, he's going to have to prove himself to me, and I'm sure that UFC feels the same way about that, before he would want to get that title shot. One guy that beat him back in the day that he needs to get some retribution on is Dominick Cruz. If he can't beat Dominick Cruz, what makes you think he's going to get a title shot and jump him? So he's got some work to do.
That's what I would do. You got Dillashaw Garbrandt. That's going to be the fight anyways. We know that's going to be for the title. You have that one. Your number one contender, at least sort of quote-unquote, is going to be Dom Cruz versus Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, if they can do that in relative, you know, quick turnaround. And I think, again, comes down to when Mighty Mouse wants to fight again after this fight this weekend. But if you fought Dom Cruz afterwards, you could try to avenge your loss, and if you win, you're instantly a contender. You beat the champion who was the champion before the current champion.
Right.
And the guy who also had just had the title before Dom Cruz, before Garbrandt had it, and TJ Dillashaw would also be taking a step back because now he would have lost multiple opportunities at the title.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about the cross-training, but you know the other matchup I would do to start keeping the funnel system going through? Because I know they're both New Jersey, New York guys, but Aljamain Sterling
and Jimmy Rivera.
Yeah. I'm not sure if they've ever cross-trained before being in that local vicinity, but I would love to see that be another matchup too.
Yeah, I love Jimmy Rivera. I think he's an absolute beast, and I know how much you like Aljamain as well.
Yeah, I like both of them.
I think Rivera is going to be a really tough matchup stylistically for really anyone in that division, because with his wrestling prowess and how just solid he is and well-rounded, yeah, he's going to be a tough out. That's the thing. Like, and when you add Mighty Mouse to this 135-pound division here, it just adds that much more excitement to the division. That's what you need. You throw in another superstar, and there's so many matchups that can be had, and it's really exciting. That's what I wish for every division out there, because it just gives us more fights to watch, more things to talk about.
And it actually gives Mighty Mouse some more personality, I think. Because the one thing you can say about the 135 division is there's some personalities. Whether it's TJ, whether it's Garbrandt, Dom Cruz, even Jimmy Rivera, Aljamain. There are a ton of guys who have personality. Yeah. And that's the one thing I think that Mighty Mouse is lacking. TJ doesn't have that necessarily in spades. He's starting to build a little bit more with his feud. So I think that would be something that would be ideal for him once he does get his 11th consecutive title defense.
I'm really interested to see what's going to happen with Dillashaw and Cody when that actually does take place, because you can tell the bad blood between those guys is real. Mm. It's as bad as Cormier and Jones. These guys hate one another. And for me, when I was watching this season of The Ultimate Fighter, I felt like it was kind of a bad look for Cody, in my humble opinion, just because he came across as kind of like the jerk. You know, TJ was like, look, what do you want from me? I'm just trying to further my career, you know? I had this opportunity here, and I wanted to do both, and I felt pressure from, you know, Uriah and these guys, and who knows how everyone, the true story behind it. I'm sure it's, you know, it goes a little bit both ways. The truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Right.
But it's an interesting storyline. These guys are former training partners, and apparently Cody knocked out TJ in training, and there was a video of it. He hasn't released it, but you know, it just adds some more spice to it, and so when that fight happens, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Speaking of it, I don't want to talk about rivalries and touch on Connor too much, but did you see the Nate Diaz stuff today?
I mean, I see him posting stuff all the time.
Actually, I guess it was earlier in the week, so it wasn't like perfectly like right this last second, but Nate Diaz on Instagram, UFC posted something about, it was a picture of Connor, and it says, I never lose when I fight. I either win or learn something in defeat. Which, again, inspirational, blah, blah, blah. And Nate's like, yeah, you got winded, I can't even censor myself.
If you want me to talk about Nate Diaz, you just got to kind of get like this, get a little gangster, you know what I'm saying?
Is he selling this fight? Do you think this is Nate Diaz trying to do his marketing arm?
I think Nate Diaz realizes that there's a lot of money on the table. And if he can get the next shot at Connor, that's big bucks. This is Connor at an all-time high right now. He's as famous as you can get in the world of combat sports. So this is him at an all-time high, and Nate is being smart to capitalize on this right now and to really push the envelope to make this Connor's next fight. So, I mean, good for Nate.
And if I'm the UFC, I definitely book this one. And I book this one here while you still got some buzz going on to it, which is the last card in 2017. It just makes too much sense not to. I mean, just do it. Get it. If everyone can get it done, pay Nate whatever money he needs to. Might not be $30 million, but give him like $7 to $10 million and give Connor his... Give Connor his $30 million if that's going to be the gate for him, because the pay-per-view buys will sell itself and people will buy it. And you know what? The other people on the card... on the lower part of the card, they will also become stars too. Like, that's one make stars off of.
That's exactly right too. And I think the thing with the Diaz brothers too is they've always complained about how they don't get enough respect, they don't get paid what they deserve. Well, this is their time to get paid right now. And so I think that this is really some people that are inside Nate's ears right now telling him, push the envelope, make this happen, keep talking about it, stir the pot, because this is a fight that really could change his life, win or lose, you know, because this, it puts him on that the biggest stage that there is for mixed martial arts. So I'm in for it. I just want to see Conor back in the octagon. I've made that very clear. Right. I don't want to see him go back into boxing. The Floyd fight was a spectacle. We've talked about it plenty. I want to see Conor back in the octagon, whether it's against Diaz, whether it's against Ferguson, Khabib, Holloway, whoever it is. Just make it a mixed martial arts bout.
Speaking of respect, you touched on it there. I've got a lot of respect for the Bellator MMA promotion, and it's not just because they're coming back to New England for a card in October, which looks pretty good, including our friend Heather Hardy, who was on the last show. But also, because they're building from within, they're signing these young up-and-coming guys, these prospects, so to speak, who are either relatively inexperienced or at least are showing these glimpses of brilliance and saying, we want to lock you down early, we want to give you some big-time money that you probably wouldn't be making early on in your career, and trying to make superstars as opposed to having the chill sons of the world come from the UFC and sell their cards. Like an Aaron Pico, who unfortunately for him did not have his MMA career start the way he wanted to. It was a loss, and a quick loss, I think 23 seconds or so, when he fought, was it Zach Williams? I got to look in that.
Yeah, I have to double check that.
It was not the greatest debut, but now he's already scheduled for a second fight. And he's going to be fighting a guy who I think will be able to...
Zach Freeman.
Zach Freeman. And he looked really impressive, too. Actually, surprised a lot of people. But with Pico, he's getting back in there. He's going to be fighting now, as Bellator announced here recently, that he's going to be fighting on the 23rd of September against a guy who's got 10 fights under his belt, Justin Lin. 7-3, has lost two of his last fights, though. Hasn't competed for over a year by the time he steps into the cage for the next time. His last bout was at TWC 24 back in April of 2016. And he also lost recently in his second-to-last fight to Matthew Lopez, who's now in the UFC. So, you know what? This is a good fight for him. It's a good test. It's a guy who also would like to get a win, making his Bellator debut. So, you know what? I like that this young man is not going against tomato cans. He's trying to test himself.
Yeah, and Matthew Lopez is no joke.
So,
lose to Matthew Lopez, that's nothing to hang your head about. I will notice this, just looking through his record here in the past, he beat a guy we had on the show before in Patrick the Animal Williams.
I saw that,
too,
yeah.
He's in the UFC as well. So, I mean, this guy is legit. And so we're going to find out a little bit more about Aaron Pico, which is great because there was so much hype behind him to begin with.
Right.
There has to be something behind that. There has to be reasons for it. So hopefully we're going to see that here in this fight.
Are you excited to see him fight again?
Sure.
Will you be, though, if he loses? Let's say he loses in the first round again. Are you excited for the third Aaron Pico fight?
Well, I mean, if he loses again, I think that's going to really, his hype train is going to be halted pretty substantially. But he's still super young. So you never know. Like, he might, maybe even if he does come back and loses, he takes some time off. He goes and he shores up the weaknesses in his game.
Yep.
He comes back at, 21, 22 years old, and he still has 15 years ahead of him to compete at a high level. So this kid is super young. Down with that.
You like that?
I do. Yeah, that could work just fine. And, you know, that would be one of those fights that you can really hype up and promote. The old lion versus the young lion. They both have their wrestling background. And, that could be something that I could get into.
And, again, good on Bellator for doing this. They've been sometimes knocked in the past for doing these sort of showy fights where I'm bringing Tito Ortiz in past his prime. But this is a good thing. This is good for them and their promotion, and I think it could actually make them a credible contender to the UFC by having guys like Aaron, like a Logan Storley, and some of the other prospects that they're picking up to build in the future. So good things could be had, I think, if they continue in this direction. And you know what? They come around to the Northeast a lot more than the UFC has, at least specifically New England.
Definitely.
So I'm always in favor of that.
Absolutely. I mean, there needs to be more cards here, big-time cards, in the Northeast, not just for my selfish reasons of wanting to go and
yes,
attend.
It is. Yeah, it is. Come on.
No, but just for everyone here. The New England region is filled with a lot of rabid MMA fans. So as the sport continues to grow, you're going to see more and more shows around here. And I think Bellator is doing a great job of putting on some fantastic shows. So it's a great promotion. I love it.
And speaking of some great fighters, too, we've got a couple coming up for this edition of the show as well.
Sure do. We'll be right back with Julian Marquez. The Main Event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog right here in Bangor is on 26 Front Street, right on the beautiful Penobscot River. You can reach them at the Sea Dog by dialing 207-947-8009, or if you want to check them out online, go to seadogbrewing.com. What you guys need to do is on Wednesdays, go spend your Wednesday night or evening, whatever it may be, at the Sea Dog. They have unbelievable specials. A 2-pound lobster with French fries and coleslaw, only $37. They also have a 14-ounce teriyaki ribeye with mashed potatoes medley, and that's $27. Or if you're not feeling like your paycheck isn't as much as it has been lately, you want to save a little money, they got you covered there too. Barbecue pulled pork sub, onions, peppers, and pepper jack cheese with shredded potato fries or sweet potato fries. That's only $12. So many different options for you to get at the Sea Dog. And as always, they have the delicious Blue Paw on tap and plenty more beers to choose from. Do yourself a favor. Go to the Sea Dog in Bangor at the Penobscot River, 26 Front Street, or you can call them 947-8009.
Chained our hearts in vain, we jumped, never asking why. We kissed, I fell under your spell of love no one could deny. Don't you ever say I just walked away. I will always want you. I can't live a lie, running for my life. I will always want you. Came in like a rat.
On the show now is one of the newest members to the UFC middleweight division. After impressing Dana White with his second-round KO of Phil Hawes at Contender Series 4, he will make his official UFC debut on December 16th at UFC on Fox 26 when he takes on Vitor Miranda. The Cuban Missile Crisis, Julian Marquez, is on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited today.
It's an absolute pleasure, and you should be excited with the huge win that you got in front of Dana White and your upcoming UFC debut. You should be a happy man.
Oh, yeah, man. It's a dream come true, man. Or it's a dream starting to come true, I should say.
Well, I asked you about the music, and you surprised me with some Miley Cyrus. Is this the song you're going to come out to when you make your UFC debut?
I don't know. This is the song I listened to as I was walking out. When I had my headphones on the Contender Series, I don't know if you guys watch my career as an amateur or as, you know, getting started, but if you look up videos of me, I'd always walk out to songs that make me laugh and make me feel good, and Miley Cyrus was one of the biggest songs that I came out to, where everybody started calling me the wrecking ball in my amateur career, because I ended up throwing a pretty vicious knee to an opponent and took him out. So this song means a lot to me. I love this song.
And I'm going to say this. When you become a huge star and you're main eventing a pay-per-view, I want to see Miley Cyrus perform this song live to enter you into the octagon. I'm just going to put that out there. We're going to make that happen for you.
Oh, I'm 100% down. Like, I would love that. You have no idea. I would go up there and sing with her while I walk out. Give me the mic.
I like it. Well, again, you got some big things coming here in your future, especially after what we saw on Contender Series. Let's dive right into that fight, Julian. What a huge win over Hawes. What was the game plan when preparing for this fight? Because this guy had a lot of hype behind him. So what did you and your team decide to put together to prepare for this guy?
So the thing is that there really wasn't a whole lot that we said that we were going to do in that fight. When I train for somebody, I don't train for them. I train to defeat myself. I train to see what would defeat me, what will beat me. So essentially in this camp, I'm like, all right, what are the things that I need to improve myself to where it'd be tougher for him to see an opening? So as I did that, I went through training. You know, I understood his wrestling was good, But again, I'm not going to sit there and train wrestling the whole time and forget about everything else. So our game plan was literally just go out there and, you know, let him tire himself out. Let him sit there and come at me as hard as he can, as hard as he wants to, and just, you know, go with the flow and figure out what you need to do to, you know, to get the victory. Figure out what you need to do to get out the round and go into the second round because you're going to be fresher. Is exactly what it was, and that's how it went. You know, the first round, even though he took me down, which I will tell you this, I've wrestled a lot of people in my life, and that kid has the strongest double leg I've ever felt. Like, he is so strong. I was impressed how strong he was, but, you know, when he got me in it on the ground, it was just, he wanted to hold me there, so I didn't need to get up. I didn't need to do anything. I just waited till I have an opening, and I didn't want to tire myself out. So when second round came, Coach Wood, you can hear him say it. He's like, he's done. He's tired. You know, he has nothing. This is where you excel. And lo and behold, it's where I excel.
So you never felt like you were in any significant danger when he had your back in the first round. And he was able to get both hooks in a little bit, and it looked like maybe to the untrained eye that you were in a little bit of trouble, but you never felt like you were in any significant danger.
No, not at all. There's a lot in that fight, if you watch it. There's a lot of things that you should properly do to get out of certain situations. But I didn't care to get off my back. You know, I didn't, because there wasn't anything, if you watch the punches that he threw on me when I was down on my back, they weren't anything significant, any life-threatening or endangering punches. Like, cool, you can pity-pat me all day. But the thing is that you could feel his strength. As I would sit there, you could feel his strength, you know, kind of like slowly, actually, rapidly, like, go away. As you see, like, when he first took me down and got on top, if you like watched his strength and how he was able to hold me, and when he tried to start throwing punches, you know, I was moving around and I used my strength to stand up, versus the second time he took me down, like, he kind of just laid on top of me because he was tired, he was depleted. And I sat there, you can hear everybody in the corner is like, get up, and then they slowly switched it. Hey, stay there. He let him drain himself. He's getting himself tired. And that was pretty much what I saw and what I felt.
Now, when you're in a position like you were in the first round, where maybe it's not as advantageous as, you know, landing, you know, hard punches on someone standing up, when you get back up to your feet, when you're down on the ground like that for a couple minutes, do you get an adrenaline rush? It looked like you felt fresher, and you look a lot stronger almost after you got back up to your feet. Is that something that is normal, not just to you, but maybe to MMA fighters when they do get back up to their feet?
So when I get back up to my feet, I don't know. With me, it's different. I don't know how to everybody else, but like, are you asking if in the second round, or are you asking in the middle of a round?
Yeah, like
starting of a round or the middle.
Yeah, the first time he took you down and you were down on the ground for a little while, and then you were able to get back up to your feet. I was just curious if you get an adrenaline rush once you know, because you just accomplished something that is a win for you. You were able to get back up to your feet when you were in a bad position. So I'm just curious if that gives you even more energy because you feel like you're back into the fight where you want it to be.
Yeah, you can definitely you can say that for sure. I'll say that for sure. Like, it gives you an adrenaline. Like, it's the little small victories in the fight that keep you going. You know, like, you have 5 minutes, and the tables turn in that round over and over and over and over. And like, you literally don't have, you know, you don't really ever have a second to be like, oh yeah, I'm like dominating. You know, you're sitting there like, good position, bad position, good position, bad position. So whenever I sit there and I look at the small victories, like when I was even on my back at the end of the round, I was sitting there, I'm like, hey, he's on top of me, but I'm hitting him with them elbows. And those small victories right there, I got excited for. And it brought me a lot of energy. You know, even when he, like you said, when he took me down, I stood up. That's something I'm known for in my training deal, is if you get on my back and you break me down, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to try everything I can to do to stand up, and everybody knows that. So I look at those as small victories, and as those small victories, and you keep focusing on that small victory, you know, you start performing better and better, and you keep your head in the right space. Mm-hmm.
Now, you were saying earlier that you could feel his power starting to diminish as the fight progressed. Could you tell as you got out of the first round and into the second round that you were ultimately going to get this finish?
No, not at all. Not at all. I wasn't even going for that finish. Like, to be honest, like I knew I was going to get the victory. Now, how I was going to get the victory, I was unsure of. 100%. Phil Haas is a tough dude. Phil Haas is a strong guy. You know, physically, the guy looks like, you know, he was chiseled out of stone. My bad for cursing, but...
That's all right. We can edit it right up.
But he, like, he's a tough dude. So being able to take him out the way that I did was, you know, it was a blessing, to be honest. Like, terrible to sound like it was a blessing, but like to have that power and to have that, you know, ability is amazing, you know.
And obviously you finished the fight, Julian, with one of the most devastating kicks to the head that I've ever seen. Did you know that when you landed that kick that you had just made the UFC?
No, not at all. Not at all. Like I you know, after I kicked him, I don't know, it's very, very weird, but when I kicked him, you see that I threw the kick, you see, you know, the ref coming in, it was Herb at the time, and like, he like pushes me back, so I'm like, okay, and then I'm walking over to my corner, and then like, for like some reason, I turn around and look, and I realize he was knocked out. I didn't know he was knocked out. I thought he was just rocked. I didn't know how the knockout went, you know? I didn't, so that's why I sat there. And I got watched, and I was so worried for him the entire time. And wasn't even thinking about the UFC. So whenever they told me that, I was just like, oh, shit. Like, I was still in shock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you showed really unbelievable sportsmanship inside the cage after the knockout. You don't see a lot of fighters do that to that level that you did. You were kind of down on your knees and just you look very somber even in the win. How important is sportsmanship to you, win or lose? Is that something that you really value?
You know what? Sportsmanship to me is, I think it's a great thing. I think, you know, regardless of whatever the encounters are, whatever happens and everything, I believe, like, you know, being kind to your opponent and being, like, great to your opponent, respectful is everything. You know, don't get me wrong. Like, people are going to talk trash before it. People are going to say whatever before it. People are going to act however they want before a fight. But after the fight, man, like, you know, that guy is the only guy in that whole entire room that stood up, you know, right in front of me. That stood in front of me, that stood up to me and was like, hey, man, we're going to bang it out. Like, let's go. So after that, at the end, man, he has all my respect. Like, 100%, he has my respect because no one else in that room stood there in front of me. You know, no one else in that room was inside that cage with me. So, like, I don't know. That's me personally. Like, I love all the people I've ever fought. You know, even before I fight them, I respect them so much, and I think that's what keeps me grounded.
Well, on that kind of sort of wavelength there, Conor McGregor always talks bad about his opponent, but afterwards, like with Floyd, he was talking glowingly about him, not just because they both made over $100 million, but also because you were able to go out there and compete at the highest level, and there's always that respect factor. So in that regard, do you feel like the sport of MMA needs more of this way to sell fighting with some like manufactured bad blood, or would you rather just have it go in there and be respectful and go about your business and have impressive knockouts like you had?
No, I believe people need to be who they need to be. I believe people are had their own, like, genetic code. You know, I'll never be like Conor McGregor, ever. That guy is, you know, he is literally the goat of marketing. You know, he can market himself. He got it. He created his own path because of who he is, man. He's amazing. And speaking about any other fighter, like Nick Diaz, the same way, you know, those people know how to market themselves through a different style, through a different, you know, understanding. Like, I could never do that. I'm a terrible, like, I'm a good trash talker, but it's just not me. It's not going to come out naturally, you know? Like, I'm not going to force myself to be somebody I'm not. So I believe that what MMA needs is people to be themselves and stop trying to be somebody else. That's what it needs.
I think very well said. Very well said. Now, with your participation on the Contender Series, I also have to ask, this was a very hot-button issue last week, but what are your feelings on Snoop Dogg commentating on that special Snoopcast on the UFC, the Fight Pass? Do you think that's good for the sport, or do you feel like that's maybe more of a spectacle thing that gets casual fans maybe a little bit more interested?
You know, to be honest, like, as a fighter, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion and, like, how he talks about, you know, the fights and everything. You know, I respect them regardless, because that's not – it's a different outlook, and it's a different – or I shouldn't say outlook. It's a different, you know, input that other people have. Like, you know, Snoop is very intelligent. Snoop is a funny guy. He's awesome. And when he watches the fight, he's kind of a novice. But he doesn't care what he says. Snoop Dogg is Snoop Dogg. He is who he is, and you're going to get it, you know. You're going to get what, you know, what you get. And that's the thing is, like, when you get these, like, fans around that barely watch MMA, that barely study MMA, you know, they are saying the same stuff. You know, they'll sit there and be like, oh, the whole time you're going to sit there and cheer for Conor McGregor, and then Floyd wins, and then, oh, I know Floyd was going to win the whole time. I just want to go with the underdog. But, you know what I mean? Like, they just switch their stuff. So, like, he's, you know, he's speaking to those people and getting those people more invested. You know, it's, like I said, you got to be who you are, and that's who he is, and that's how he talks. So regardless of whatever it is, that's Snoop Dogg. And if that's how he talks and that's how he wants to, you know, speak about the fights and everything, I think it's awesome. I think it's great that someone else is doing that.
How crazy is it that if I had asked you 2 years ago that you'd be talking about Snoop Dogg calling one of your fights 2 years ago, would you just have thought like I was absolutely insane?
Dude, yeah, I probably would have. You know, like, I will say this, that, one, I think that question you can ask any fighter ever, and ask them that same question, and they will say, yeah, it's pretty crazy. Because, you know, you're talking about Snoop Dogg. We're not talking about, like, hey, 2 years ago, if you thought you were in the UFC, you know, I wouldn't say that's too crazy.
Right.
But having Snoop Dogg talk, that's something. It's like saying, hey, Ice Cube's going to come and throw a birthday party for you. You're like, wait, what? You know, like,
yeah.
Hold up, rewind. So,
yes,
I think it's insane.
Times keep evolving. I mean, now you get Ice Cube, who started this 3-on-3 basketball league, and I never would have imagined that, you know, a few years ago. So there's that as well.
Just wait until Kanye West is like a UFC official in 3 years. It's going to be crazy.
Oh, man, I'm ready for it. Let's go.
Now, Julian, you train at Syndicate MMA in Vegas. What is camps typically like there? Run us through usually what a week is when you're right in the middle of camp. And is there anything specific you're going to be working on differently than normal to get ready for your official UFC debut?
Camps are hell. That's what they are. Let's be honest. They suck. So at Syndicate, man, a typical camp would be, it's crazy. Let's say right now, let's start off with this camp that I have coming up for Vitor Miranda. So I'm working at the UFCPI, and they're helping me with the strength and conditioning aspects. They're helping me with physical training. So I'll do that 3 times a week and eventually boost up to 4 times a week. So we'll jump off of the UFC PI and then we'll go over to Syndicate. Right now I have Andrew Sanchez and Eric Spicely in town to help get ready for their fight. So we'll start our our camps doing Monday. We wake up. I'll do Muay Thai with Marvin Eastman and sit there, and either it's technique or it's just a grueling, you know, conditioning round where he puts a band on my back and we sit there and compete. Or we sit there and hit mitts and do everything for an hour. Then I'll go into my team practice right after, and I'll repeat that all day that, or every day that week, 10:30 into Marv, and then right into team practice with John Wood. And then later on that night, I'll hit mitts with John Wood and then do a private session with Sanchez and Spicely, and we'll sit there and we'll go over certain techniques and just run over one technique for an hour, and we'll just cycle through it and then call it a day.
Yeah, and obviously there's going to be a ton of different things that you're going to have to work on as you get ready, not just for any mixed martial arts event as your professional, but for this huge match that you have against Vitor Miranda. What challenges do you think Miranda is going to present to you when December 16th rolls around?
Man, not to be disrespectful or anything, but I really haven't seen anything on Vitor Miranda. Like, I honestly didn't even know who the name was, if that's pretty crappy of me. I haven't looked up anything. We have almost 4 months before the fight. There's no need for me to worry and sit there and destroy myself for the next 4 months worrying about what it is he has to do and what it is that he presents a problem. All I know is that he's a Brazilian, and he's a tough-nosed dude, and the guy is, you know, he's beat some good people, and he has a lot of experience, which I'm all for it, man. Like, I'm 100% down for it. So if you had an interview with me here in 2 months, it would be a little bit different. But right now, I'm just training and focusing on making myself better in the aspect and tightening up little things that I need to improve on.
Now, Vitor had three wins in a row against Jake Collier, Clint Hester, and Marcelo Guillermoz, before losing two in a row to Chris Camozzi and Marvin Vettori. So he's lost a couple in a row now, so I'm sure he's going to be coming to really get a big win here against you. When you look at your overall game, Julian, and you think about what makes you an elite mixed martial artist, what is it that you do best? When you go in there and you're going to, when you think about getting a victory here, what typically do you envision yourself doing? Does it matter because you're that well-rounded, or do you see yourself having an advantage against most opponents because of you're so elite at a specific discipline?
You know what? I believe I'm well-rounded, but the thing is, what I think I have most that most people don't is that I accept the fear, and I've accepted the fear of everything for this fight. For the fight, and most people aren't afraid. And what I mean by fear, I don't mean by fear of my opponent. I don't mean by fear of being in the cage with him and taking his punches or kicking. I mean the fear of everything. The fear of getting that phone call saying you're gone, getting that fear of the people that ever doubted me throughout this whole trip that said I should never even be here. That fear motivates me, and it motivates me throughout the entire camp. So once I get into the ring, that fear has, fueled me for 3-4 months and got me ready and prepared. And now that I'm in there, that fear turns into will and want, and that will and want, you know, turn me into a different person, and I won't give up. You know, I won't break. I'll be, if I'm injured, if I'm split open, you know, the ref's going to have to pull him off or pull me off. That's that. You know, I don't care if I get knocked out. I don't care if, you know, I get beat up for 15 minutes. You just know that after that bell rings at the final deal, you've been in a fight.
So when you're walking down to the cage to make your UFC debut, when you talk about the fear that motivates you, will that fear manifest into nerves as you prepare to make your UFC debut? Or do you think when you walk in there, it's just you're going to have a ton of adrenaline and you're just going to be ready to go?
Man, you know, from how it's been working, you know, I will literally be in the back before I even go into the cage, before I even hit the walkout. Before any of that, man, I'll be in the back room sitting there, and my stomach will be bubbling. You know, my legs will kind of, like, sit there and, like, oh, you know, we're there. And I'll probably announce it out loud and say it straight to my coach's face, like, hey, man, I'm scared. And he will laugh at me like he has before, and he'll talk to me, and he'll say what he needs to say. And as time gets closer, you know, the fear starts to change. The feeling inside my body, it's unexplainable what goes through my mind and what goes through my emotions, but I can feel it start to change. And as I slowly sit there and hear music that I'm walking out to, the music, the song, whatever it is that I chose, when I slowly start hearing that the feeling starts to manifest into something more. And it starts building up, and then I start walking out. You hear your name, and then you hear the people yelling and booing. You hear those outside noises, but it doesn't affect you at all. It doesn't change anything. It just helps you build up, and it manifests into something stronger. It helps you the feeling that is unexplanatory. And the moment I walk into that cage, the moment I sit there, I look across and I see my opponent, and then all of a sudden it's like a computer downloading a program where as I sit there and they say everything, whatever it is they say, I still don't know what it sounds like whenever they announce my name in the ring, whatever they call out. I still don't know. I just have my eyes locked on my opponent, and my everything changes.
So you feel like
there's another person that comes through.
So you feel like essentially when you're stepping into the cage or in the octagon, you're stepping into the Matrix.
Yeah, essentially. I can control that. I can control what happens. I can see what happens. I'm telling you, it's like when I'm in there, I feel like it's like a remote control. You know what I mean? Like I'm standing at it with a third-person view. And I'm controlling, and I see what I need right in front. I see what's happening before it happens. You know, I anticipate it, and that's how it goes in there. And it's like I said, it's a switch. There's something on there that happens during that changes me into somebody else. And when the fight's over, it switches back to me, and I don't, like, I know what happened, but I don't fully know what happened, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you for being so candid. You almost did it so well visually that I could see myself as you walking down to the cage and realizing the nerves and then everything setting in. That was very well described.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So I got to ask you, too, this, Julian. The Cuban Missile Crisis, that's a heck of a nickname. Elaborate on that.
That actually came on my 11th or 12th amateur fight. I never had a nickname. People were throwing all these random names out, and it was the fight for Kansas City's, you know, number one 205 pounder. And there was a kid that I was fighting. His name's Danny Click. He was 10-0, undefeated, taking out everybody. Dude's a savage. As before, I was gonna go walk out for my fight. I guess what it was told to me after the fight was my good friend Dallas Browning and his wife Courtney Browning were sitting next to the referee Ozone and Anthony Sharkbait Gutierrez, and they're all deciding, like, hey, what's Julian's name or what's his nickname? And they're all just throwing out nicknames, like trying to figure something out because I never had one. And Courtney Browning, like, whispered to her husband, Dallas, and said, well, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Right before that, Anthony Sharpe Gutierrez was like, hey, the Cuban assassin. And then, like, he's like, no, you know, forget that. The Cuban assassin, everybody's an assassin at some point. Like, no one's been the Cuban Missile Crisis. Let's give them the Cuban Missile Crisis. So they all agreed. Those people all agreed to give me a nickname. And the funny thing is I've never had a nickname. And that nickname was given to me moments before my fight. So as they call my name out, I'm sitting there, and the song that I came out to was Icono Pop, I Love It. You guys know that song?
I do, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that was the song I was walking out. Or it was Kesha, actually. Kesha, the heartbeat of the drum. Icono Pop was the one before that. So anyways, they were calling me out. You know, they sit there, and I'm standing in the tunnel waiting, and it says, Julian, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Marquez, and I'm waiting there. And at the time, I was with Zach Cummings and James Krause at Glory MMA in Kansas City, and they're my coaches. So I'm waiting, and waiting for them to call my name. They already called my name, and, like, they shoved me, like, hey, go. I'm like, what? They called my name? Like, they're like, yeah, they called your name, and they're laughing. And, like, I'm laughing, like, wait a minute, what just happened? Like, whose name did they call? They didn't call my name. He said, go. So, like, I start walking out. I'm, like, I'm laughing as I'm walking out because I was like, dude, in all of my life, I've had people call my name, and I understood it. Even in school, my teachers would call my name, and they would be angry. They would be laughing, whatever. I've always knew my name, but that one time I never knew who I was.
The nickname just took you too off guard, but I think it fits. It works well because if you remember back in time, it was such a scary moment in our history where everyone thought the world was going to end. And any time they step in the cage with you, they think their career is going to end, right?
I like it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that was a – Cuban Missile Crisis was a failed government, you know, project, but it makes for an awesome name.
And, you know, I think I got a secondary nickname for you, too, if you ever decided you want to leave the Cuban Missile Crisis behind. I think based on your visual description of what it's like for you to walk into the cage, the way you described it, talking about walking into the Matrix, you could be Julian the One Marquez or Neo after kind of like Keanu Reeves' character in the Matrix. What do you think of that?
Dude, you know what? Let's be honest. Keanu Reeves is my favorite actor. So any name you give me, I will gladly take. All right, any name by Keanu Reeves, I'll go. Like, I'm telling you, you guys don't understand this. My favorite movie is John Wick. I saw John Wick in theaters 5 times.
It's a good movie. Have you seen the second one yet?
Oh, I saw that many times. I have the movie here. It's bad. I talked to Mick. And I told him, when I was talking to Big Manor about the fight, like, we were just talking about a fight, and he was telling me a little insight. They matched me up with it, and I was like, oh, cool. I was like, man, honestly, I don't care who you put me up against. I was like, you can give me an impossible task, and I'll John Wick it. And, like, he started laughing. He's like, no, we're going to do it right. And I was like, okay. So, like, they set me up with a good fight for Vitor and me, and regardless, I want to go in there and hit John Wick style and, you know, shock everybody again.
I absolutely love it. Not just your love of pop music for your entrance songs, but your love of Keanu Reeves has really made us feel a little closer to you today.
Oh, great, man. I'm so happy with. We just became best friends.
We did.
Absolutely. And so with that said, Julian, you definitely have to come back and talk to us again, hopefully right before December 16th for UFC on Fox 26 when you take on Vitor Miranda. And if we can't make that happen, we need to do it afterwards and discuss just how you picked up your debut win in the UFC.
Yeah, man, that would be awesome. Just inform me whenever you guys want me on, like, and we'll get our calendars together and mark down a date and time, and we'll have another conversation.
Perfect. Sounds good, my friend. Thank you for taking the time today.
Yeah, thank you guys very much. I appreciate y'all.
Hi, this is Brian Stackpole, and I want to thank you for listening to The Main Event. And if you want us hand-delivered right to your phone every single time we produce another episode, well, here's a couple of ways you can do so. Go to iTunes, search in, and find our show, and subscribe right away. And while you're there, leave a nice rating as well, because it helps us provide you the best interviews, the best content available. We are also now available on Google Play as well, so go and check that one out, and we will be available in more places than ever before. If you're on social media, make sure to check out The Main Event Show on Facebook. Give it a like, and be sure to keep up to date with all the latest news in the mixed martial arts world, and also ways for you to interact with the sports you love. So make sure The Main Event is subscribed to on Google Play, iTunes, into your phone, so you always have us with you. We can keep you company on those long rides throughout the state of Maine, New England, or throughout the globe. So make sure you do that, and we'll have more Main Event content provided your way coming very soon.
Say Shy City.
I'm coming home again. Do you think about me now?
Joining us now is an undefeated mixed martial artist who competed last at Titan FC 44 in the main event when he defended his bantamweight title with a unanimous decision victory over Farkad Sharipov. Jose Shorty Torres joins the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, no problem. And actually, a small little correction. I actually won the Bantamweight Championship, defeating Farkad Sharipov to claim the title. And it was a great fight, man. I'm actually finally fully recovered from it. For people who don't know, in the first round, I got dropped. I broke my hand, tore my MCL, and got stuck in guillotine, and was able to come out and push even harder the next four rounds, 20 minutes. And I'm finally fully recovered 3 months after the fight, and today's my second day of sparring. So I'm just nice. Happy to be back.
Absolutely, and thank you for correcting me, because I was looking at your background, and you've won so many titles, it was so hard for me to keep track as to what you won or what you defended.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, it's definitely been a ride. It's always fun, you know, doing new things. You know, as an amateur, I was not just in Chicago fighting, you know, everyone in my pond, if you want to say. I was fighting the other big fish from different ponds and traveling all over the country and all over the world. Now the pro being able to claim, you know, the flyweight championship at 3-0, and then now at 5-0, getting a bantamweight championship. It's really cool, man. I did a Conor McGregor, but three times a SAS when he was in Cage Warriors. So I'm really really honored to be able to accomplish what I've been able to do.
Do you ever walk around with the title belts and just call yourself the double champ and say you can do whatever you want?
I wish. Well, one, I only have one belt right now. The second belt is still actually being made. It's one of those belts that, I mean, it costs a lot of money to make. They're pretty much like the WWE belts, super legit, super custom made for Titan FC. Every champion gets their own custom belt. So every time somebody new comes in, Titan FC, you know, gives the money to the belt guy, and he makes a new professional custom made belt for these guys. And I'm pretty sure when my belt comes in, both my belts combined together are going to be worth more than I am. So whenever I go broke and need money, they'll probably be gone very soon.
See, that's the way it should be. I think that's exactly what every promotion should do, because even if you lose a belt that you won, you still were the champion at one point and you won a belt. So I think every champion should be able to keep a belt regardless of if they lose it or if they retire.
Yeah, and I mean, so far, I believe that's the way it works. Even in the UFC, everyone, you know, gets to claim their belt pretty much forever. That's their memorabilia, that's your trophy that they have always in that top shelf, whether regardless if you win it or lose it. But it's a cool thing to know that, you know, win or lose a belt, you have it, and it's yours for the rest of your life, so you can show, you know, next generations that, hey, man, I did it, and hopefully you can do it too.
Speaking of the UFC, and we'll talk about your career here in just a moment, but do I have this right? Did you get blocked by Sean Shelby on Twitter?
No, actually, I got blocked by Mick Maynard.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's just on Instagram and Facebook. I'm not sure too much on Twitter, since I can still see his name. I haven't really tried. But it's, I ended up, you know, calling him out and, you know, doing shout-outs, trying to get myself and promote myself as much as I could to get called up. And sadly, after my fight, even though they did call, it was always for the Contender Series or for a last-minute fight, which at the time, I was injured. You know, my hand was broken, so I wasn't going to be able to fight, at least cleared, until September. And I don't want to fight until November. At least I want to have a full training camp and know that my body is fully recuperated and I'm able to fight. And, you know, I guess I made a post that was, it offended him just a little bit. And he was like, I'm going to block you. I mean, you're a good kid. I like you. you know, we'll keep calling you, but I don't want to be tagged in any more stuff. So kind of annoyed him with that. So right now I'm technically blocked by Nick Maynard on social media.
Well, that's actually pretty cool, though. I mean, you got to do something right to get blocked by Nick Maynard, right?
I hope. It's like a pro in town, you know? It's like, what's that saying? You don't bite the hand that feeds you, but a closed mouth don't get fed.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
So what's the median there? You know, I'm in limbo right now. I know I'll be fighting against the Titan SC if I don't call up. And if I fight and UFC, is it a last-minute call-up? Am I getting called, you know, for a month or 2 months wait? You know, so I'm trying to figure out what's next. But right now I believe Titan SC is the next thing for me again. And, you know, we'll see who I'm fighting.
Now, I think the goal is, you know, he knows your name now. You're on his radar. So you've accomplished that, you know, regardless of how you did it. He knows who you are. And that puts you ahead of the game from a lot of other fighters. And we'll dive into what's next for you in your career here shortly. But first, I want to go back to the beginning here, because you actually started competing in karate when you were just 4 years old. And then you started wrestling as a teenager. What drew you to combat sports at such a young age?
Well, there were a couple things. You know, for me, I loved martial art movies. You know, my father always made me watch Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, Power Rangers, Dragon Ball Z, and those are all my idols growing up. So watching those shows, and I guess I'm agreeing with the complaints the parents gave for Power Rangers when it first aired, it made kids want to fight. You know, it made me want to not fight to be, you know, a evil guy or anything like that. It made me want to fight because I wanted to do good in my life. You know, I wanted to show people that I can be a hero too. And, I started practicing and playing fun with my mom, my dad, my brother, and eventually they're like, hey, we're going to put you in karate, and I ended up being the first black belt in Shotokan karate in Chicago, and just, I kept on doing so many things. Eventually I got to high school, I lost the bet to join wrestling, and I was like, all right, cool, I'll join wrestling, whatever. And eventually I led the combat to match Bob Sherman, so learning pretty much everything MMA affiliated, you know, Sanchao, Pancration, kickboxing, boxing, jiu-jitsu, I mean, the list goes on, and it's been fun. I didn't know I was going to become what I am today. As a multiple world and just national champion, but overall it's been an inspiration, not just for myself, but other people around my neighborhood and around the world. It's real cool, man. It's like I'm not even doing this for myself anymore. I'm doing this for everyone else.
And, you know, talking about everyone else, you know, being a part of a team, you did that when you wrestled at McKendree University. That was while you were in college, obviously. So how important was the skills that you learned wrestling in college to what you have now as a full-fledged mixed martial artist and being an overall well-rounded fighter that you are?
I think personally wrestling is probably the best base you can start off with when it comes to MMA or just combative sports. Wrestlers just adapt so easily to being able to move their hips and change their body weight, because that's what wrestling is. You know, being able to know, you know, the body positions, how to feel someone else's body and know where they're going to go and manipulate the bodies and how they move. It's real cool. So being able to adapt to boxing or kickboxing, Muay Thai or changing stances, wrestlers know how to do. Compared to, you know, you get karate or boxers and they go straight to kickboxing or boxers straight to wrestling, you usually see guys get taken down pretty easily and get beat up because of it. So wrestling's definitely helped me a lot. It's definitely helped with body control and mainly top position and just being able to get out of a bad situation. You know, if I'm getting beat up on top, at least I know how to take you down. If not, at least call it a scramble to get out. And honestly, I think what's Dan Gable's phrase? Once you've done wrestling, everything else in life is easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the condition in wrestling is ridiculous. Yeah. And once you move to MMA, once you get used to the shoulder and just movement conditioning, it's like the same thing all over again. So it's awesome, man.
Now, you had an extensive amateur career before finally going pro. Was that just to basically make sure you were ready before making that jump where you're getting paid to fight, or did you just enjoy the competition?
Well, I definitely enjoyed the competition, but it was a mixture of two things. You know, I was getting my full ride paid for at McKendree University, so I wanted to be the first one in my family to graduate from college. And, you know, MMA is not a longevity type of sport. That's something we're all pretty much looking forward to, but you see people go 1-0, 2-0 in the UFC, or excuse me, 0-1 and 0-2 in the UFC, and they make a cut. And they're like, oh, man, there go my hopes and dreams. And usually they don't make it back. Now they make small paychecks working side jobs. So for me, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be working at a small job or, you know, working on my hands like that and doing grunts the rest of my life. Let me get a degree just in case if, you know, for example, I get hurt or I'm just not that good at the sport. I have something to fall back on. And two, you know, if you're going to be good at something, you have to practice it. You have to be patient. You see all these boxers going 100-0, 200-plus fights, 300, 400-plus fights with Lomachenko, and you see MMA fighters only going 5, 6, 7-0, maybe even 10-0. They go pro, And then they finally travel to a different state or a different country, and they get beat up by the other big fish in a, you know, another pond. So, you know, for me, I always say get the most experience possible, and don't be afraid as an amateur to lose. You know, go in there having fun. Enjoy the competition because, again, one, it doesn't last forever, and two, you need to get beat up. If you don't win, you learn. So it definitely helps to travel and train. For me, I had 26 amateur MMA fights. I had 50-plus in kickboxing, Muay Thai, San Shao, and 100-plus in wrestling. I mean, it's definitely practice makes perfect, and because of what I've been able to do as an amateur, it's got me better respected as a pro.
And you're 5-0 as a pro now. Between your amateur and pro fights, how many belts have you actually won?
I'm trying to think about that now. A lot of championships that I've won have more been trophies and medals, like the Pan American Kickboxing were medals. But overall, I had 10 amateur titles, 2 world titles or medals, and then you know, my 2 professional Tennessee championships at 5-0. Again, it's been awesome, man. Even as a professional, I decided to fight the best competition as fast as possible. I'm only 5-0, but the guys I've beaten had a combined record of 50-19. So it's not like I've been fighting, you know, just a random Joe Schmo to get belts. So I'm just happy that I've been able to do what I've been able to do.
What does your trophy case look like? Is it just like a room just full of trophies, belts, and medals on the wall?
Well, my room definitely has all my childhood trophies and medals hung up. Actually, we had to take the medals down because they started to break the cabinets that were holding them on. So we ended up just putting all the medals away in a small little package. And all my belts are actually hung up at my gym. Besides my 2 Titan FC belts, all my amateur belts are hung up at my gym, where pretty much I started combat though, so hopefully inspires the other kids and goes, hey, Shorty came from here. Oh, man, he's from the neighborhood too. Man, if he can do it, I can do it. So, they're definitely hung up to hopefully inspire others to do the same thing, if not better.
So I know this is going to be somewhat comparable to kind of choosing, you know, which child is your favorite, but is there a belt that stands out that you're the most proud of?
I don't know. Actually, it's besides my 2 Titan FC championships, if I were to go back to amateur, I think one of my proudest moments was winning the first ever United States Mixed Martial Arts Championships, which is the UMA, and that qualifies you for the World Championships. And the reason I say that is because that was my toughest fight. I fought a guy named Carl Rogers, and I knew his style, but for some reason I was real timid when I got in there and just really nervous. And I stood still, and I was like, you know, let me take a couple shots. And the guy, I mean, it seriously, like, it just felt like it was hitting me with bricks. I mean, I even blocked. I got dropped 3 times in that fight, and I was still able to win a split decision because I just grinded it out and pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. That fight actually better prepared me to face Barkov Chirapov and, you know, get dropped in that fight and be able to push through it as well. But, I mean, the guy punched my glove while I was covering my face, and he still dropped me. That's how hard this guy hit. And, yeah, I could take a shot, so that's saying a lot. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, I don't think I would have been as prepared to compete in the Worlds and to compete where I'm at as a pro. And actually, the following year, the second time, we ended up facing the second championship in a row, and I was able to dominate that fight and show that, you know, I'm growing much faster and I'm practicing really hard, and really this is what I want to do for a living. And, you know, it's been Carl Rogers what was, and told me a lot. That was probably my proudest moment.
All right, Champ, when you do move up to the highest levels, do you want to fight at flyweight, bantamweight? Do you want to go back and forth to both? What's the projection for you, do you think?
I honestly would like to do both. I know the UFC is a little, you know, iffy with that. They prefer guys staying at one weight class, and if they are going to move up, most of the time they're veterans like, you know, Cowboy Cerrone. For me, I'd like to claim the 10 FC championship. I'd like to just run through the guys. I know what I can do against most of them. I practice with pretty much 75% of that weight division, and, you know, I know what I can do. I've trained with some of the best, and eventually I know for sure later on in my career I want to go 35, but if I can bounce back and forth and just put on a show for the fans, I'm not afraid of losing. That's not what I do this sport for, is just a win-win-win. That's awesome, but I want to put on a show. I want people to remember that if I'm going to be on a card, you know, it's going to be an exciting fight, and they're going to definitely tune in to watch it. So for me, I want to go both weight classes, and, you know, we'll see. I mean, that's pretty much what I'm doing at Titan FC, and actually we'll see on my next fight chat too.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but you're 5'4" and you have a 66-inch reach. What is it you typically walk around at? How much weight do you have to cut to even get to 135?
35, not much. Actually, I don't know what my reach is. It's funny because every time I go to Titan FC, they're like, oh, you're 70-inch reach. I'm like, oh, hell yeah, that's awesome. You know, I'm a small guy with a 70-inch reach. That's perfect. And then I go fight, and they're like, oh, you're 67 or 68. I'm like, what happened to 70? You know, come on, guys. But overall, man, it's real cool. I usually, when I first started, I weighed 165, and I was nervous to drop back down to 25 because I was a little traumatized doing it every single weekend in college of going down to 25 and competing because I couldn't compete at my best, even though I knew I could have beaten the guys. So dropping down to 35 was a little difficult at first, but I just changed my eating habits. I hired a nutritionist as my weight management specialist and really worked at it. And now, naturally, my weight's at 147 generally. So if I say my next fight's at 135, I'd probably have to cut naturally, you know, 12 pounds. I wouldn't even call it a cut. I'm just dieting. And if I have 2 months, I'm pretty much 134 by the time weigh-ins, you know, begin. So it's not even me draining myself. I'm still drinking a gallon a day and everything's perfect. And the last time I made 125 against Pedro Nogre, it's technically about 20, 23 pounds, but I work so well with Luis Giordano and everything just goes so perfectly. We probably weigh 3 pounds. Yeah, I would say about 3 pounds a day before weigh-in, and then we just get it out very easily. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be at 25.
You've mentioned how much you like fighting for Titan FC, and you've practiced and sparred with a lot of different fighters in your weight classes. Who is the next logical person when you're defending either the 25-pound belt or the 35-pound belt? Who's the next best contender, do you think, for you?
I don't know. You know, right now, at the 25-pound belt, there are two guys in Titan FC that are more than qualified to fight. One is Gustavo Belart, which right now is a projected guy to fight me because he did win his contender matchup again to be announced. We don't know if he's going to be injured or he backs out or, you know, things happen in the sport. And then Oscar, another Chicago guy who I believe is 6-0 now, just beat a guy, I think his name was James Blair, and it was a great performance. He got dropped in the first round and was able to push it 2 more rounds. So both of those guys definitely are more than willing to get a shot. But then you also have Gleeson de Jesus, who fought the same day I won my bantamweight championship. And actually, right when I got to the hospital, he tagged me the next day saying, "You're scared to fight me?" Yeah, yeah. I'm like, "Dude, I'm injured. Like, I'm not scared to fight you. I'm injured. I got to get surgery. So give me like 2 months and then maybe we can talk about it." So Gleeson de Jesus is another guy that I believe he's 7-2, but he's an animal. You know, he's a capoeira guy. He's very tricky. He's a guy who does nothing but push forward and wants to push the pace. He's a bigger guy. He's a stronger guy. And I think that, for me, is a more entertaining fight. But whatever Titan FC wants, it's going to be what Titan FC gets.
And what is the time frame? Are you looking at getting back in here in the next month or two, or are you still a little ways away from getting back in there and defending either title?
I'm definitely a little ways away. The reason I say that is just because you know, I've been out for 3 months. Yesterday was my first sparring day, and even though I was able to do like 15 two-minute rounds each, which was awesome to know, I was definitely drained. My body's sore today from waking up and moving around, but I'm slowly getting back to it. But you know, I told my MCL I broke my hand. This is my first ever big injury. I've never had surgery before. So it's a little, you know, I got to get more of the mental aspect. My body's physically there, but mentally I have to be able to know, hey, okay, you can move like this again. You can punch like this again. You know, you do the things you used to do. You just got to slowly ease into it. So that's pretty much what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to, you know, ride the bike again and then, you know, be able to go in a straight line without falling. So I'm going to say November is probably the best time. I want to be able to get 2 months training camp to know that, you know, I can get back to this, and my body's fully, fully healthy and recovered to do what I can do.
How cool is that mural of you, by the way? I'm looking at it right now on your Twitter. It is absolutely amazing, but to have that on a brick wall is going to be something that's a great honor to you.
Dude, it's awesome. You know, it's a little cheating because my brother drew it, but it's awesome. You know, it's one of those things that the funniest story was, it's Chicago. So Chicago laws are definitely very different. Mainly when it comes to permits and permission walls and stuff like that. But my brother, literally, he just started drawing an outline of me next to, I believe it was on the Honda building, you know, somewhere in Chicago. And, you know, Honda guys, representatives come out, they're like, "Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing?" And my brother started telling my story. Like, "Hey, man, he's from the neighborhood. He's a 2-time world champ. He's trying to inspire people." And the guy's like, "You know what? Go ahead, finish it. If you need me to buy you the spray cans." And he pretty much supported my brother painting the wall because of my story. My brother ended up painting the mural, and actually other towns have hit me up, and I've even talked to the town president for the town of Cicero, and they want me to draw another mural, or they want my brother to draw another mural in my hometown right now, town of Cicero. So it's awesome to know that, you know, my homegrown town, Chicago, and Cicero both want me in there right now in Chicago representing to get people actually taking pictures of it. And for me, all you see is, you know, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, Vasyl Lomachenko, even Conor McGregor these days, and even, you know, passed away fighters on walls, and now I'm being represented on a wall.
it's really an honor. It's one of those things that you just kind of hope for one of these days. I'm just happy I've been able to accomplish that too.
Yeah, talk about the city of Chicago and just what it means to you, because I know it has a nice history of being a really fun city to go to and visit, but also it breeds some really good athletes and fighters as well.
Yeah, honestly, you know, Chicago is it's a 50-50 type of place, man. It's a beautiful place. You can never go wrong with food there. You're always going to have a great time with food, and that's why my training camps are always outside of Chicago, because I can never cut weight at home, mainly with my parents cooking. But I have to represent my neighborhood. It's one of those things, again, I wouldn't be as tough as I am. I wouldn't be as street smart really as I am if I didn't grow up in Chicago and eventually move into Cicero, which is the suburb right next over. It's a huge thing, man, and I want to show people, you know, Chicago to me is like Gotham City, you know, if it were a comic book, because we do have a lot of crime. We do have a lot of problems and a lot of really, really dumb crime. But, you know, I want to show people to do better in life, and I want to inspire the younger generation to come up and do things that I'm trying to do, whether it be fighting or not. Just trying to accomplish your goal is the biggest thing.
Will we see you be the one to finally take down Mighty Mouse one day?
I'm hoping so. I don't believe Ray Borg is going to win this fight, and I don't believe anybody in the flyweight division right now is going to beat Demetrius Johnson. You know, for me, I honestly do believe I have the style to beat him. You know, he is a guy who moves around a lot, but, I mean, you talk to T.J. Dillashaw, I'm a very, very, you know, he's one of my training partners. I'm a very forward opponent, and I know I give T.J. Dillashaw a little bit of a hard time as well. And they have almost around the same style. If not, I believe T.J. is a little better because of his strength, his power, and his wrestling. I believe I have that style. I know I can walk forward. I know I have the technique to be able to counter whatever he has, and I'm just waiting for the opportunity.
So how far away do you think you really are from actually making that crack into the UFC? 5-0 as a pro right now. If you rattle off another couple of wins, do you think that we're going to see you in there within the next year or so?
Well, I hope so. You know, I made my 2017 New Year's resolution to say I was going to be in the UFC, and that's something I really, you know, aspire to do, and that's what I'm still trying to do. I believe I can make it by November, December after my fight, and I'm hoping I'm healthy enough to get straight back at it and get another fight in December, because, again, I want to make up for lost time and put on a show for the fans to get all that support. But, you know, for me, it's one of those things that I feel like they need to look at my paperwork. Instead of just looking at the number of 5-0, I feel like they need to look at my resume and look at all the stuff I've been able to accomplish, mainly at a young age, and how fast I've been able to do it, and the possible excitement I can bring to the flyweight division. That's something I believe it definitely needs. You know, me fighting Tim Elliott or Brandon Moreno, Sergio Pettis, Ray Borg, Demetrius Johnson, all these bigger name guys that are already in the top 10, I think I do very well against, and I'm not afraid to go against any opponent. So, yeah, for me, I'm just waiting for the call, and I'm hoping McMahon unblocks me and finally decides to give me that call up, you know, instead of just a call when I was injured. Finally, a call up.
Yeah. We hope so, too, because it'd be just an honor to watch you fight, and I think you'd do very, very well. You can also follow Jose on Twitter, at ShortyTorres125, and I'm noticing a lot of sponsors, so I'm sure you have some people to thank, and we'll give you the floor to thank any family members, friends, and also sponsors here.
Oh, man, I have so many sponsors, but the biggest people help me throughout my recovery right now is, you know, Dr. Dave Smith, chiropractor, GoPolar Cryotherapy, M3 Muscle Motion Mastery. I'm actually staying with them in actually 3 weeks to hopefully start throwing head kicks and get the splits. I want to do the Van Damme one day, so that'd be awesome. But everyone's been helping me out. Bad Boy sending me more gear to really get back in my recovery and show off what I can really do, and I'm just really excited to get back at it. And actually, big news coming soon on my website, JoseShortyTorres.com, starting next week, or actually TeamShorty.com, either or, next week. I'm just really happy to be back, and I'll be doing a 25% off sale on everything on my website from Monday through Sunday starting next week, and I'm just really happy to be back, so I want to be able to give back as much as possible, and all the money goes to the proceeds for my training camp, and I'm just excited to get back to it, and I can't wait to put on a show for everyone, and I appreciate all the support.
I'm looking at the website right now. There's some pretty cool merch out there, too, so I might have to be enticed to buy something next time.
Well, I appreciate it, man, and again, you know, I appreciate everyone's support, because actually, most of the time, I ended up just finishing a fundraiser. Usually when I do fundraisers for my gym, for the kids to travel, compete, like I was able to when I was younger, but I had to go outside with a can and ask people for money, so it was definitely different. I want to give them a better opportunity doing so. 20% of my proceeds usually go to the kids in my gym to travel and train or even to compete. You know, last time we took them to Orlando to compete, and we had a world champion, so it's real cool, man. You know, I want to keep on doing the same thing and help out as much as possible. So please, guys, teamshorty.com, and I'd really appreciate the support.
Oh, well, we appreciate you taking the time to join us today. And you 1,000% have to come back and see us again soon, hopefully before your next fight. Sound good?
For sure, man. I can't wait. Just give me the call and I'm on ready.
The Main Event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog right here in Bangor is on 26 Front Street, right on the beautiful Penobscot River. You can reach them at the Sea Dog by dialing 207-947-8009, or if you want to check them out online, go to seadogbrewing.com. What you guys need to do is on Wednesdays, go spend your Wednesday night or evening, whatever it may be, at the Sea Dog. They have unbelievable specials. A 2-pound lobster with French fries and coleslaw, only $37. They also have a 14-ounce teriyaki ribeye with mashed potatoes medley, and that's $27. Or if you're not feeling like your paycheck isn't as much as it has been lately, you want to save a little money, they got you covered there too. Barbecue pulled pork sub, onions, peppers, and pepper jack cheese with shredded potato fries or sweet potato fries. That's only $12. So many different options for you to get at the Sea Dog. And as always, they have the delicious Blue Paw on tap and plenty more beers to choose from. Do yourself a favor, go to the Sea Dog in Bangor at the Penobscot River, 26 Front Street, or you can call them 947-8009.
And it is time after these great interviews. And again, thanks to all our guests who come on throughout these episodes now. We're on number 76. It seems like, as we touched on last episode, just yesterday we began that. The Humble Studios, and now we've expanded to multiple studios and everything else. But we always appreciate the time our guests spend.
Yeah, it truly is. I mean, it's really kind of crazy when you sit back and you think about it, that just over a year, now we're 76 episodes in. That's just wild.
How many guests have we had, if you had to do a rough estimation?
Oh, my God.
400?
I mean, what's...
At least appearances?
75 times 2, that's... Well, that's over...
That's 150, right?
150, and then multiple... Yeah, so we at least over 200. I'd say,
yeah,
I'd say somewhere around 225. 225 is probably where I'd cap it at.
Very nice. Plus some of the weigh-in shows.
Yeah.
We got like 8, 10
that's
people
true.
On it. So
yeah, maybe
who
more.
Knows? We'll have to actually go back and through and see if maybe we can compile that at some point. But without further ado, Ryan, it is time to make our picks for UFC 215 up in Canada. Our neighbors to the north. We could actually probably go out there if we really wanted to. It's not that far away.
Right, we could.
I don't have a passport, though. So
I know, we need
I'm
to work on
screwed.
That, both of us.
But what we're going to do here is we're going to pick the main card. We'll start from the first fight on the UFC pay-per-view card and then move all the way up until the two title defenses and two title matchups with Amanda Nunes and Demetrius Johnson defending their titles here. So we're going to start in the featherweight ranks. Jeremy Stephens versus Gilbert Melendez, and we'll make the picks. Ryan, I will let you do the honors to start things off here with Stephens Melendez.
This is really an interesting fight. Both of these guys are veterans. They're both really tough and durable, and they're both coming off losses. Jeremy Stephens has lost two in a row to Frankie Edgar and Renato Canero, and Gilbert Melendez has lost three in a row, and these are all to studs, so you really
right.
can't hang his head. Anthony Pettis, Eddie Alvarez, and Edson Barbosa, and two of them went to the distance. You know, this is one of those fights that it could go either way, and I'm going to go with my gut on this one. I think Gilbert Melendez is a little bit more... a little bit more seasoned and just, I don't want to use the word durable because Jeremy Stephens is a stud and that guy can take a beating and can give one out. I just have a feeling that Gilbert's going to get this one. He needs it a little bit more. He's lost three in a row. Stephens only lost two. So if you just go by that math right there, Stephens can still lose one more and hang and keep his UFC job.
Right.
So I'm going to go Gilbert by decision.
Melendez might be the greatest strike force lightweight champion in the history of that promotion, right? I think we can go there. I'm looking back through 7 times he defended or unified the title. He won it one time,
yep.
And then 7 more times. Had an absolute torrid career in strike force, But then when his UFC career actually began, he's only won one time, Ryan.
Yeah.
One time. He's 1-4 in his record, including those three fights, too. And he hasn't fought in over a year. Yeah. Hasn't won since 2013. I did my research earlier today. I did a lot of research on this stuff. Well, as you mentioned, too, Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar, a couple of the losses for Stevens, as he's lost three out of his last four. Still, he beat Hennen Burrell. You can say what you want to, that it was after the first Dillashaw loss, so it might not have been the same Hennen as we had saw prior.
Oh, he lost to... No, he did beat Hennen.
Yeah, he beat Hennen. And again, he's younger, not too much younger, but slightly. Just something about Melendez just screams to me that this is like the retirement fight. Like, this is the last one. He wants to go against a very tough opponent in Jeremy Stephens. And that's why I think Stephens will win this one. He'll retire Melendez. And I see it going the distance because there have only been three total finishes between these two fighters since 2012. So I think this is going to go the distance. And that's not like two fights since 2012. That's quite a handful of them.
And so you think Stevens will win a unanimous decision?
I'm going to say a unanimous decision. I think he's going to dominate it enough to get the unanimous.
You know, what's funny is I wouldn't even be surprised if, because I still think, you know, I'm still going to go with Gilbert. I think he's going to win a close decision here. But I would not be surprised if he does retire off of this fight, because I think Gilbert is one of those guys that wants to go out with a win. I don't think that he would feel comfortable with everything that he's accomplished in the sport. I don't think that he would feel comfortable with retiring off of four losses in a row. I think it would eat at him. So I think he's going to give it his all in this fight and really, really test himself and dig down deep and come out with a win. So we'll see what happens. Both of these guys are awesome, so it's going to be a great fight.
And while Melendez, 35, is not very old considering just the lifespan of a human being, it is fairly old
in the
and long
game.
In the tooth in the fight game. So I would not be upset if this was his last fight, regardless of the outcome. But I'll take Jeremy Stephens, Gilbert Melendez for you.
Okay.
Our first differential there.
All right.
I like it. So off to a good start here early on. I'll go first with this one. We're going to move to light heavyweight. And Alir Latifi versus Tyson Pedro. And this is a fun one, Ryan, because what we've been talking about over the last couple of episodes on how thin outside the top light heavyweight is, right?
Yeah.
You've got John Jones, and we're still waiting to see what happens with him. You've got Daniel Cormier, we're still waiting to see what happens with him. You've got Gustafson and Ozdemir. And then there's like Manawa, there's OSP, maybe if Rumble comes back. There's some other floaters, but they're not really these big-time sexy names.
And then you got other guys like Ryan Bader and Phil Davis that
they're
are
just jettisoned.
Going to Bellator. They just left.
And if they were back in here, you'd be looking and saying light heavyweight actually is pretty thick, and this might be an overlooked fight. But I look at this one and say this is a golden opportunity for both of these guys to go out there and make a name for themselves. Pedro's an Australian, undefeated 6-0, just two wins in the UFC, and he's only 25.
Yeah.
Think about that.
He's a stud. He could be one of those up-and-comers.
And he has not reached past the first round in any of his fights yet. And Latifi's still a very dangerous guy in his own right, too. He last lost to Ryan Bader via a TKO in his last fight out before Bader jumped ship to Bellator and everything else. But I mean, he's still a very tough and difficult opponent for anyone. But with that being said, just looking at what Pedro's been doing and how young he is and just how quickly he knocks people out, to give him this opportunity, I think the UFC is trying to set Tyson up for the knockout. You see how I did the Mike Tyson, Tyson Pedro thing? They're trying to set the Australian up for a very, very quick ascent up the light heavyweight ranks, much akin to a Swiss guy we talked to a couple of times, and Volkan. I think they want to see this guy have a similar path, so this is his way to do so. This will be one fight before he gets to another big-time challenge, before he's right in the mix with things. So I think he wins first-round knockout, too. He's got to keep up the streak.
First-round knockout. Wow, okay. Well, we're going to differ again.
Oh, I like it.
Because I think Latifi is legit. And I think I don't think that Tyson has faced a guy quite as good as Latifi. I mean, you look back
Very
at his
true.
Track record.
Yep.
I mean, he's beaten guys like John Volante and Sean O'Connell. Both of those guys are legit. I mean, John Volante trains with Chris Weidman there in Jersey, and he's a beast. And O'Connell, I don't know if you've seen him fight much, but that guy is no joke either. So I think this is going to be a step up in competition for Mr. Tyson Pedro, and I think that Latifi is going to come ready to bang, and I think you're going to see Tyson be the one that get knocked out in the first round.
Oh, so but you think it's going to end pretty quickly?
I think both of these guys have a ton of power, and it's going to be one of those fights that whoever lands that first big shot, they're going to be on roller skates, and the other guy will put them out. So, but I'm going to differ with you. I'm going to go with Latifi and make us opposites now, two
like
for
it.
Two. I don't think we've ever started off with
no.
two separate picks before. So,
and Latifi, I think he's only gone the distance 5 out of his 18 fights.
Yeah.
So I'm liking it.
Yeah.
I'm liking that one to end early, and I wouldn't be surprised to be first round. All right, let's go to this one. RDA versus Neil Magny in a welterweight clash. This is a very intriguing one. Ryan, I'll let you start this one off.
Well, Neil Magny, his last fight out, he beat Johnny Hendricks at UFC 207, and that went the decision. Before that, he lost to Lorenz Larkin, and then he beat Hector Lombard, Kelvin Gastelum,
yep.
And Eric Silva before losing to Damian Maya way back in August of 2015. So, look, Neil Magny is legitimate. This guy's been around for a very long time. He's long. He's lanky. He's difficult to deal with because of his size. He uses his reach well. He's a true veteran of the sport. You know, RDA, former champ,
right.
Tons of power, obviously one of the best in the division. Since he lost to Eddie Alvarez in July of 2016, he proceeded to lose to Tony Ferguson, no shame there.
Exactly.
And then went and beat a very, very tough game, Tarek Saffiedine, via unanimous decision at UFC Fight Night 111. This is one of those fights to me where I think just in my gut it tells me that RDA has just a little bit more than Magny.
Yep.
He's got more power than Magny. I think he'll find a way to get inside Magny's reach, and I think he'll be able to land some big shots. That doesn't mean he'll be able to finish Magny, because Magny is so tough and can hang. He's a very game fighter. I just think that RDA has more tools and is the angrier guy after losing the belt, wanting to come back and reclaim what he thinks is his. So I think this fight's going to go the distance. I think it's going to go all three rounds, but I'm going to give it to RDA.
I think this is the first time we're going to agree. Neil Magny is like Cowboy Cerrone. That guy loves to fight. You know how many times he's fought since 2013?
Oh, geez. Like 10?
16.
Really?
16 times. 12 victories, too. The guy loves to fight. He's a guy who loves to go into the octagon, too. And at 12 UFC victories,
right.
There's nothing to shake a stick at. But the losses that you mentioned for RDA, I mean, Eddie Alvarez... is nothing to be ashamed of, even with Eddie having a little bit of trouble as of late, including getting just decimated mentally by Conor McGregor, but who hasn't, calling Jose Aldo. but I honestly think RDA had been preparing and getting ready for that Conor McGregor fight, and I think he almost had talked himself into it completely, where, if you recall, the first Nate Diaz fight with Conor actually came from that injury from RDA. They just needed to have a replacement. Nate Diaz stepped up, and now we'll probably see the end of the trilogy here at some point in the near future. And after that fight, RDA just hasn't been the same guy who looked like he was going to become like the Aldo of 155. It looked like he was just going to have that reign of that title because he was dominating guys like Cowboy.
Yeah, he's a beast. He's got a lot of power.
But again, the two losses are to Eddie Alvarez, again, a very difficult opponent, and Tony Ferguson,
right.
One of the like scariest monsters at 155.
Right.
So, you know what? I'm going to say RDA comes back. He picks up yet another win. Now a two-fight win streak, and we can see what he can do in this division now. I'm going to say second-round submission for RDA, though.
Okay. All right. I like that.
All right, next one. It's time for the title matchups. We'll move first to the women's bantamweight in the co-main event. Amanda Nunes takes on Valentina Shevchenko. And let's see what we have on this one. I think I'm going first, right?
Well, feel free. You can feel free to go first in this one, because I think we both know what we're going to go with in the main event.
Amanda Nunes is what my pick is going to be, just because I think she is finally the stabilizing force that we haven't seen since Ronda Rousey was decimating the bantamweight division. She's got power. I think she could even excel at a higher weight class. I'm not sure she could excel against Cyborg, because I don't think anyone could excel against Cyborg, but she's one that's looking for the knockout, and Shevchenko can take the punches. I'm just not quite sure she can take Nunes's punches. And again, say what you want to about Rousey and her trying to do her opposition's game. That's how she lost to Holly Holm. That's how she lost to Nunez. She tried to outstand up her opponents, and she got clipped, and she looked like a mess. But she just decimated someone that we used to have six-second Vine videos of finishing. Like, Rousey's fights were over in a Vine video, if you can remember those. It was like 6 seconds and over, and then you saw someone just absolutely land clean shot after clean shot after clean shot against her in Nunez. I just haven't seen someone be that dominant in a long time. And she hasn't just retired Ronda, because I don't think she's ever coming back. She retired Misha Tate, too. Two very good fighters. And that's why I just like Amanda Nunez. I think it does last to the second round, but I don't think it lasts past the second round. TKO.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going the opposite direction.
Seriously going to go with Valentina?
I really am. You know, I think Valentina Shevchenko is the real deal, and this girl is so good everywhere the fight goes. Look, they've already fought once before, and that was a unanimous decision, 3-round victory by the current champ Nunez, and that was at UFC 196, the first time McGregor and Diaz got it on. And I feel like based on I rewatched that fight not too long ago, and I feel like there's a lot of things that Shevchenko did that were pretty good, and I think that she's been working on the things that she feels like maybe that were her deficiencies in that fight. And I just really like her. There's something about her. I want to root for her. I want to cheer for her.
Is it because she trained at Young's MMA that one time?
No. That's not it at all. I think that this girl is the real deal. And I think she, I mean, look, they fought before and it went the distance. This is a 5-round fight. I think the better conditioned athlete will end up winning because whoever wins those late rounds will probably end up pulling out a decision. I don't see either woman getting finished. I think it's going to go the distance. I think it's going to be one of those epic fights that the women's division needs. Now that Ronda's gone, now that Misha's gone, I think the women's division needs a legitimate contender, whether it's Shevchenko or whether it's Nunez, however you want to look at it. I think you're going to see these women fight a third time and really have that trilogy matchup, because I think Shevchenko's going to get the job done here, but I think it's going to go the distance, and she's going to win a unanimous decision victory.
I just think Nunez has grown so much, even from that fight. And you can say Valentina's probably grown quite a bit, too, from that last fight between those two. But I just see what Nunez has been, what she is, and it scares me for that women's bantamweight division.
You know, Shevchenko beat, you know, Holly Holm and Juliana Pena. Juliana Pena is kind of like somewhat of a version of Amanda Nunez in some ways. You know,
so, less good. Like I'm not gonna say a knockoff version, but she's like the generic version.
Yeah, she's not as good as Nunez, but they're comparable. And you know, to beat Holly Holm, that's saying something right there. Holly Holm had to go up a division. She's a bigger woman. Shevchenko is actually bigger in some ways. I don't think she's quite as muscular as Nunez, but she has the height and she has the reach and everything. I just think that you're going to see this woman come out. This means the world to her. I watched some of those UFC breakdowns and how much she just lives, eats, breathes, sleeps, everything MMA. This just means the world to her. And I don't think that she'd be able to live with herself if she lost again to this woman. So I think she's going to give it her all. And I'm just going with my gut on this one. I think that she's going to get it done.
I'm surprised at that one, honestly. I'm really surprised. Because didn't you pick Nunez before, back when we initially made the picks?
I did, yeah.
But you switched in a month and a half.
I'm switching, too, because the last time that they were supposed to fight, and this is something I probably already should have addressed, when Nunez had to pull out, she said she had a medical issue and everything. There was never really any clear reasons as to why, I guess, she missed weight or couldn't make weight. To me, it made it seem...
Well, she did make weight, didn't she? She pulled out the night of the event.
Right, so. That's right. That's what I meant to say. But she pulled out. So why would she pull out? Like, I don't know if there was something going on medically. I don't want to say anything to, you know, be disrespectful or anything like that. I almost feel like Shevchenko was a little bit in Nunez's head. Maybe I'm wrong. It's just an assumption that I had. Mm-hmm. I just feel like when I looked at Nunez, when she was looking at Rousey, when she was looking at Tate, she looked like her lioness moniker, like she was just going to rip through these women, which she did. She just didn't she didn't look like she had that same fire in her eyes when she was looking at Shevchenko to me. That's just what I picked up on. So I don't know. That's interesting too, because she took a lot of flack from Dana White about it, from pulling out. She's never going to headline a card again. You can't, that's just unprofessional, this and that. We'll see how she bounces back. I mean, I would imagine that it probably messed with her a little bit. I'm sure when she gets back into training that all of her strength and everything will come right back, and it'll be probably, just a drop in the bucket to her. But I just think this is going to be a really interesting fight, and I'm just going with my gut. I think Shevchenko's going to do it.
Amanda, please do not pull a Fabricio Werdum and do that goofy smile down to the octagon. Because if she does that, I have my right to change my opinion. If she does, like, full Joker smile, I have the right to change my opinion. It's on the record.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to put that out there. All right, finally, this one's probably going to be the most anticlimactic pick of all time. But Demetrius Johnson versus Ray Borg. So you're going to go Ray Borg, right?
Yeah, no. obviously going Mighty Mouse. I mean, how can you not? The guy's, his record is ridiculous. He's 27-2-1 overall. I mean, he's beaten guys like Tim Elliott, last time out, Wilson Race, Cejudo, Dodson.
Speaking of which, Cejudo and Race are facing each other in the undercard.
That's right, which would be a good fight. You know, he's beat Benavidez, Moraga, Dodson again. I mean, Ian McCall, he's beaten everyone in the division. Who's to say, you can't convince me that he's not going to go and beat this guy. So, I mean, I don't really know what else to say. Just go ahead and watch a Demetrius Johnson clip on your smartphone right now, and I'm sure you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
When does it end? That'll be the one thing I'll say here.
I think, with all the disrespect that Ray Borg has felt, like he's going to come out and give it his all, but I think he'll probably end up getting finished in the third or fourth round.
TKO or submission?
TKO.
Third or fourth?
Yeah.
Which one? If you had to pick.
You know what? I'll go four.
Okay, I got third.
You got third. Okay.
I have it written down here, so you can look at it and say.
All right.
That might be our tiebreaker.
We'll see. Yeah, okay.
Fourth round. So if it's third or earlier, I got that. Yeah. You got fourth or later.
Sure.
All right. Beautiful. I echo your sentiments. I think Mighty Mouse is going to maybe not play with Borg, but I think he does feel a little disrespected. Both the guys, actually, I feel like, are feeling disrespected heading into this one. So that's why I think it will go a little bit longer than a first round finish. And plus, that's not really Mighty Mouse's game. He can finish you early on, but it's not necessarily what he does best. He's more of a guy who's just going to continuously draw out and strike and just score. And it's
punches
really
and
amazing.
Bunches.
Pound for pound greatest right now, especially with John Jones and that cloud circling around him.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to say so. I mean, who else could you put above him just based on his resume?
Connor could at least make a claim to that one, but he needs to fight. He needs to defend his title. Like, when you have zero title defenses compared to DJ, who's going to have 7 when all is said and done on Saturday night. I mean, 11 when all is said and done on Saturday night. I mean, come on. You gotta defend your title a little bit. But, I mean, DC had a claim.
Yeah, he was right there. You know, now George St. Pierre's back. So if he wins the middleweight belt, you got to put him right back in that mix.
Absolutely. Now, would his streak continue, by the way, too, if he goes back down to 170, wins the title, and then defends? Would he be able to?
Oh, sure.
Should make sense, right?
Absolutely.
It would be consecutive title defenses,
absolutely.
I'd say.
Yeah, he never lost the belt. So if he went back there.
I think he'd have to win it first and then defend it to continue on to his title streak. But, hey. DJ might have to fight at 125 a couple more times just to put some distance between him and GSP. But, yeah, it's interesting. So we only had, what, we had two similar ones.
Three differences.
That's pretty good, though. So. It's better than normal.
I know. Normally, we usually have, like, one difference or maybe two at the most. So
Ryan, we're back to normal. We were agreeing way too much there recently, so I'm glad we're now back on the differential train here. So we'll see how it all goes off, and yeah, we will have the winner. We will announce the winner here. I mean, you can follow at home if you really want to, too. But we'll announce officially who's the winner on Wednesday's edition of the show as well. And maybe we'll have a special ceremony or something with a belt. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure something out. But on that edition of the show, too, give you a little heads up. We're gonna have Pedro Gonzalez, the new CES featherweight champion. We're going to have him on the show to discuss his victory and what is next for him, if he's going to be taking on the Mangler here soon or what. Also, one of the winners of the Contender Series, Ricky Simon, will join us as well. So we're going to talk to both of those guys.
Should be a great edition of the program coming up, and maybe some surprises on that edition of the main event as well. But that's all we can say for now. Keep it locked, And be sure to like, subscribe, follow, do all the fun stuff here. But that's going to be it for us. For Ryan Jarrell, Brian Stackpole signing off for this main event edition. And until next time,
peace.